Well, today's question, which was submitted recently, has to do with the fifth seal in the book of Revelation and the issue of God's wrath in relation to these seals. And in particular, it has to do with some of the differences between the pre-tribulational view and the pre-wrath view of when God's wrath begins and whether or not the seals are a part of God's wrath. So let's take a look at this and get into the question. So the question is, how do we address the idea that pre-tribulationalism teaches that God is pouring forth his wrath in the seals, and yet the fifth seal involves martyrdom of the saints? The pre-wrath argument goes that though the authority is given, that does not mean the activity is itself divine wrath. It may reflect God's permissive will rather than active judgment. As in Job chapters 1 and 2, Satan is granted authority to harm Job, but the harm originates with Satan, not God's wrath. The martyrs are crying in protest. But if we say, by contrast, that the seals involve divine wrath, aren't we saying that God is slaying the saints in wrath? So this question comes about because in chapter 6 of Revelation, there's these seven seals that are going to be unsealed by the Lamb. And of course, my position and the position of those who are pre-tribulational, that is to say that the rapture occurs before the tribulation, we believe that we'll be exempted from God's wrath. And if the wrath of God occurs, if all those seals involve the wrath of God because the Lamb is opening each seal, then our view is that the church will be taken in the rapture prior to that time. So the pre-wrath view differs in when they believe the wrath of God occurs in Revelation. And in particular, they're going to argue that in the fifth seal, the fact that the fifth seal involves martyrs for the Christian faith, that that's a piece of evidence against the idea that God's wrath is involved at that point. So let's look at this issue in a little more depth, and I think we'll see that there's quite a bit more to it than meets the eye. So the key, I believe, to answer this question is found in Romans 9. And Romans 9, of course, is a controversial and very interesting chapter with a lot in it. But one of the things that Paul writes in verse 22, and he's talking here about the idea of God's election and so forth, but he says, "What if God, wanting to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath prepared for destruction?" So the principle we see here, and I've highlighted, is that God is going to show his wrath, but the way he's showing his wrath is he's enduring with much long suffering. So he's putting up with behavior that he normally wouldn't necessarily put up with, or at least he could intervene and stop. So God's patient forbearance, allowing sin, allowing those activities to continue rather than immediately intervening and cutting them off in judgment, is a way he shows his wrath. So that's a little bit puzzling in a sense, that his wrath is related to him holding off judgment. Because it seems like if he is going to express his wrath, he's going to judge right away. And we'll find out exactly why that is and why that's related to the seal, answering the question of the seals as we go forward. We see the same idea alluded to in the Old Testament in Genesis 15, where God is giving a prophecy to Abram about Israel. And in verse 15, it says, "Now as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace, and you shall be buried at a good old age. But in the fourth generation, they shall return here." Who is that? They being the descendants of Abraham, the Israelites. "They shall return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete." Notice there that God is going to judge the Amorites, but he's not doing it yet. Israel is going to go off and be in bondage in Israel in Egypt for a long period of time. And then only then, when he brings them out of Egypt, is he going to have them overthrow the various Canaanites and Ites that are in the Promised Land. And part of that purpose of him bringing them into the Promised Land is to judge the godless peoples that have rejected God, that are living there in that region. So in this, we see some of this principle again, that God is purposely delaying judgment, in this case by Israel, upon the Amorites in order that their iniquity may become complete. So what does it mean for their iniquity to become complete? Well, being omniscient, God knows the depths of their ultimate depravity, right? He knows exactly, he knows when the train's going down the track, what kind of train wreck there's going to be at the end. But he purposely delays and allows it to fully flower. And this is one of these areas that biblical truth challenges our preconceptions of God and what he reveals in the scriptures. So this allows history to record what God already sees ahead will be the depth of their sin and the measure of their guilt. So notice here that God knows exactly what the Amorites are going to do. He knows that they are going to reach a point beyond redemption. And at that point, he's going to bring judgment. But if God acts right away with the harshness that is commensurate with that, history is going to disagree or, you know, evaluate God. Not that he cares how we evaluate him, but he is just. So his judgment has to match a just evaluation of what's been done. And in this case, if he steps in early, he doesn't allow sin to fully manifest its sinfulness and fully manifest the deserved judgment that goes along with that. So as he allows the Amorites to fully manifest their sin, history will record this actual development as a testimony against them. We see a similar situation with Jesus when he's condemning the scribes and Pharisees in Matthew 23. In verse 31, he's speaking to the scribes and Pharisees and he says, "Therefore, you are witnesses against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets." And he says, "Fill up then the measure of your father's guilt." So this is an interesting passage. Notice that the fathers murdered the prophets, and this was some measure of guilt. But Jesus is adding to that guilt. He's saying that the sons of the prophets here, the scribes and Pharisees, in their opposition of their own Messiah and eventually his crucifixion, they're following in the footsteps of the fathers, and they're filling up the guilt, or filling up the measure of the father's guilt. So there again, there's this idea that there's some guilt, but it's not fully developed yet. And by these sons of the prophets doing what they're going to do to the Messiah, they're going to fill up a train of guilt, or if you want to think of it as a bowl of guilt or a glass of guilt, it's going up toward the brim. And he's going to allow that to fill further at his crucifixion, and it will, of course, merit a larger judgment. So we see this idea of God holding off in patience and allowing perversity to manifest also in Romans 1. And this is an interesting passage because it, of course, is very closely related to the things we see going on today. And starting in verse 18, Paul reveals that the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. Notice there, the wrath of God is revealed. And he goes on to say that professing to be wise, these people became fools. And then in verse 24, it's kind of the hinge, or the, if you had a seesaw, this is the fulcrum of the passage where he says, "Therefore, because of all these things that they want to do and they refuse to acknowledge God, he gives them up." And this is a key idea, that God gives them up to uncleanness in verse 24, and he gives them up to vile passions in verse 26. So the fact that God is giving them up to fully express their sin and perversity is in some way related to the wrath of God. And that's what we're looking at here. How is that related to the wrath of God? Well, God allows them to fully follow their perversity to its conclusion, and thus they're earning greater judgment. So God's wrath is expressed toward these sinners by his patient waiting. And he allows them to fill up the measure of their sin. And that places them in a worse position in the day of judgment. So the idea here is that if God jumped in right away and judged them, the judgment they would get would not be as bad as if he waits and allows their sin to fully flourish. So he's allowing their darkness, the rejection of God, their sinfulness to more fully manifest so that in the day of judgment, they get the full measure of justice for their perversity. And there's a sense in which that's worse for them than it would be if he had cut them off sooner. So now let's look at the Revelation 5 and the cry of the martyrs. So in Revelation chapter 6, verse 9, when he opened the seal, that is the Lamb opens the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Then a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were was completed. So here again, we see a similar idea. There we're seeing now martyrs who have been killed, the slain for the word of God and for their testimony. And they're crying to God, how long until you judge and avenge? So notice that they're appealing to God, saying, God, please intervene and judge the perpetrators. Judge these who have killed us. Please, God, come in and judge them. And God's response may seem puzzling. He doesn't come to their rescue right away as far as bringing justice, which is exactly what we see today right in the world. But he tells them to rest, okay, have patience, stand by, wait a little while until he explains why he is waiting. Why is it that he wants them to wait? Well, because there's a number of fellow servants, brethren of theirs, who are going to be killed, and God knows that in his omniscience. He sees down the road, and he knows that as bad as it is right now with all these martyrs in the fifth seal, that it's going to be worse. And he is waiting to allow that manifestation of the sin of the perpetrators to more fully manifest. And by his waiting, he is bringing his wrath to bear on the perpetrators. Because by waiting, he's allowing their sin to fill up to a larger degree than if he intervened right away. And so there's a sense in which God's wrath is being poured out on these perpetrators by the fact that he's not acting, the fact that he's not stepping in to stop this disaster. In some ways, you could see this to, you know, aspects of the Holocaust, where it's this horrible, horrible thing. Why isn't God stopping it? Well, there's an aspect in which God is allowing mankind's heinous sin to fully manifest because the justice that comes to bear is more appropriate for the actual depth of our sin, which we want to deny as a human race. So I believe that's key in answering this question about why the fifth seal still involves God's wrath, even though there are martyrs involved. It's the perpetrators who are under God's wrath by his inaction and his delayed response. So I hope that helps look at this in a way that you can understand how this can still be a part of God's wrath, which I believe it is, because all the seals and everything that comes out from under the seals is at the hand of God. So hopefully that's helped you with this kind of puzzling question. And, you know, the seals and the trumpets and the bowls are all related ultimately to God's wrath. The bowls, of course, are the final culmination, but they're the continuation of what begins in Revelation 4, essentially, where the Lamb qualifies to open the scrolls and set in motion this entire period of time.